It's time for Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Mat-Su Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky.
Well, folks, it's time for another edition of Valley Edition. It's my great pleasure to welcome into the studio today Terry Snyder, as well as Ellen Neufer, a student at the University of Alaska's Journalism Program. And on the line, we have two people, Saz Hollander calling in from Willow, and also Philip Manning calling in from Talkeetna. Saz, you have been following the Grunewald case for some time. I know there's been some recent development in this case involving Edie Grunewald. How about sharing a little bit about that?
Sure. So as I understand it, Edie Grunewald has been appointed to serve not only on the state parole board, but as the chair of the parole board. And so I believe she would start that position in March. I've heard a few different things, and again, I'm trying to confirm a lot of information. So by the time people are hearing this program, this all may be confirmed, but she would be replacing the current chair, Lonzo Henderson, whose term expires in March.
Okay.
And so, and you know, Edie Grunewald has been on all of our radar since November 2016, when her 16-year-old son David was murdered, and subsequently there have been a series of, you know, kind of searing emotional trials, and so far two of the four defendants who were charged in the killing have been convicted. And so, you know, she is in the middle of an ongoing murder case. And as I understand it, may be the first crime victim to be appointed to this board. Now, she still needs to be, this appointment would still, as appointments do, need to be approved by the legislature. So she has not been seated as chair of the parole board.
Okay.
And that is likely to take a little while for them to get to those. They aren't even seated on the House side. So it could take a little while before all that
happens. Yeah, everything
happens,
is taking a little while in Juneau this session.
Yeah.
Okay, just for on this Friday, in anticipation of continuing work, we can say that the House has, in a congenial way, stepped forward, picking Representative Foster from Nome as a temporary chair of the House to allow Representative Jackson from Eagle River, new representative, to be sworn in. And yet, with very limited powers, as the factions and the individuals in the Alaska State House work together to try to figure out a way where they can do the business that they usually do down in Juneau. Any comment, Terry or Saz or even Philip? Let's start with Philip. Yes. In terms of the lack of seeming progress toward actually having the House gavel in.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to be bound for some continuing frustration. I think a lot of Alaskans have been frustrated with how long it's taken the legislature to do its business every year. It seems every year we're writing stories about how, well, you know, according to statute, the legislature has 90 days to conduct its business, but they pretty much blow right through that to the constitutional limit of 121 days. And given the start that we're off to, I don't see a lot of hope that we're going to hit that 90-day mark at this point.
And there have been people who have long memories and have looked back at the last time it happened, and they've gone as long as I remember 3 weeks before they've been able to put something.
Almost as long as the shutdown.
Yes. Okay.
Well,
Philip, you have just been traveling, and I was curious whether in your travels, you came from California, I believe, noticed anything of an effect caused by the partial federal government shutdown?
Sure. So, yeah, this week I flew both to and from San Diego for a work trip, and I was pretty fortunate, I think, because both at this end, at Ted Stevens and at San Diego International, the security lines weren't really any longer than I'm accustomed to. They seemed to be pretty fully staffed as far as TSA folks go. Yesterday on my way back up, I did have a brief conversation with one of the screeners, you know, regarding what's going on, and said, hey, you know, hope you guys get paid at some point. And he said, yeah, me too, or else we won't be here. And, you know, and everybody, all of the TSA employees that I encountered, you know, had a pretty positive attitude, were very friendly. I have heard some, you know, stories to the contrary from other airports and other folks that I know who have been traveling in the last couple of weeks. But my experiences this week were pretty positive on a human-to-human level. But institutionally, I think unless something gets resolved, we're going to be looking at some real significant issues here in the near future.
Okay. Well, let's shift to the other part of the government, and in this case, the administration of the governor's office. Just this week, there was a press availability, and it was interesting. I watched the whole thing, and the governor and his finance guy talked about the way in which the governor was proposing to deliver on the promise made during the campaign of reaching back to 2016 and making people whole, those people who were registered back in 2016 to receive a permanent fund dividend, and also in 2019 were also qualified. And then he spoke to what would happen to those in 2017 and 2018. The sum of it is that it looks like we will be receiving those who were qualified in 2016, 17, and 18, and remain qualified in 2019, 2020, 2021, about $3,000, a little bit more, and until all the money that might have been paid out in those years was actually paid out. A couple of very clear, simple bills. Reaction, Zaz.
Well, it's unclear right now whether the legislature will sign off on Dunleavy's bills out of concerns that they could tap the fund too much, tap the earnings reserve too much, and so. I think the amount that I saw was four, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the amount is how much it will be paid this year, which would be somewhere around $2,000, as I understood, and then adding on another $1,000 and then slightly more in the two coming years, because the total totals almost $4,000. It has to be made up, but it's being paid out over 3 years. So.
Yeah, it's a numbers game. There's a lot of different. I've heard 6,000. I think everybody's got a little bit different take on that. But you know, I still, again, and I think I brought this up last year, or last week, is the unintended consequences of that payout for a number of reasons. One just being, you know, there are a lot of people that live on the edge, and they get Denali Kid Care. They get some, you know, a little bit of help because they have minimum wage jobs. And all that goes in as earnings. You know, we have to pay taxes on it federally, and it is all part of your income. And I'm really interested to see how that's going to shake out when you have a family of four, and all of a sudden your earning level is up there with those significant amounts going up. And while, you know, I hear Governor Dunleavy talking about it boosting the economy, it's a short boost, and it does provide, you know, some money for fuel and some other things, but I'm still, nobody wants to talk about the unintended consequences of that big payment, and I think there is something there.
Well, just to remind, there was that week-long delay in the start of the ability to go online and sign up, but at the present time, on Friday, roughly 128,000 Alaskans have signed on and done what they've done. Let me ask Philip, I know you've been just shortly back, but what's your sense of the impact of this increased payment of PFDs in Talkeetna?
Well, I mean, Terry brings up a very good point in that, you know, we're in an area here in the Northern Valley with a pretty high poverty rate. You know, all of our schools in this area are Title I schools, and, you know, it is a good point to consider, you know, where those some of those programs, assistance programs, have pretty strict income guidelines. And even for folks who may not be, you know, riding the edge that much, there's possibility for people being pushed into additional tax brackets. All that said, you know, the timing of the PFD coming right at the beginning of winter season, you know, that's when people tend to buy, you know, cords of wood or fill their fuel tanks, that sort of thing. I think at least in the short term, it would make people feel, a lot of folks feel a little bit easier in the short term, but you know, the long term on an individual level, yeah, there might be some unintended consequences, like Terry said, let alone consequences for the earnings reserve account and potential need for cuts to the state budget. And another interesting thing about that is my understanding is that the legislature cannot commit future legislatures to specific appropriations. So even if these bills go through, it's not done.
Right. And of course, there was a clear separation between what was being considered for the PFD, the dollar amount, and the rest of the story, which involves creating a budget where you start by saying that some of that money, a POMV calculation, will be done to provide $1.5 billion for the budget. And yet Senator Steadman over in the Senate, is involved with the Finance Committee, says we have to cut about $1.5 billion. And I have not heard anyone yet, although it's supposed to be happening in the next week or two, point out where $1.5 billion comes from the proposed budget that the governor, previous governor, Governor Walker, made. And my impression is at this point that there may be some cuts and they may be painful, but they will be nowhere near $1.5 billion. And then the monies that will balance the budget will be taken from this reserve that is available. Though, as some people point out, it continues a rather precipitous drop in the values associated with the various funds, having spent somewhere in the neighborhood of $18 billion to keep the government going, which could produce quite an interesting income. So we don't have answers to that right now.
Yeah.
Last night, that is Thursday, here in Palmer, Alaska, we had an event that was somewhat extraordinary. AARP and other groups brought an individual, Gil Penalosa, who is I'm going to let Terry describe what happened here in Palmer, Alaska.
I feel like I spent the week with a rock star. I'm just a disclaimer, you know, I'm state president for AARP Alaska, and we were able to bring up Gil Penalosa, who is a globally known expert in livable cities. He is the chair and founder of an organization from Toronto, Canada, that's called 8 to 80, which is basically talking about creating livability in your community. If it's good for an 8-year-old, it's good for an 80-year-old on both ends of the spectrum, and to try to look through the lens of that when you're doing things in your community. So Gil was brought up here for the week, basically. Matsu Health Foundation, Matsu Trails Foundation mostly worked with me to put together a really very, very successful and gratifying event at the Palmer Depot last night. The whole valley was all represented pretty well. A lot of people from as far away from Talkeetna up there, Philip, and Wasilla were there. It's very, very rare. We had people RSVP for their rent event because it was a catered event. It's really rare to get over 80% of the people that RSVP, especially for a free event when they're not out any money, to come through the door. And it was really, really well attended, and over 80% from what I saw. Plus, we were able to accommodate a few people that showed up and had forgotten to register. But I think it was provoked some really good conversation. I encourage you to Radio Free Palmer both streamed the event, and Mike, you filmed it. It gave us a lot of things to think about on how you can make a good city, even as good as Palmer, to be a great city with working together and still keeping the uniqueness of who we are. We like to think we're way different than everybody else. Gil's traveled to over 300 communities and worked with them all over the world, too. He's originates from Colombia. So has seen a lot of things, and he has a real knack for letting people know that we can be better, and just small things can make a community just much better for all ages. I was very gratified because I think we're at a very divisive time in our community, and we're a nonpartisan organization, and I think we have sort of fiduciary responsibility to bring all sides together, no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. And we may not agree on everything, and we may not agree on getting to where we want to get with this, but if we can, agree that we have a goal of livability for all sectors of ages. I think we're going to come out on the other side much better.
And just an observation, after the presentation by Gil Penalosa, there was a panel of eight people that sat up there, and it was a pretty diverse group. The mayor of the borough, Bernhalter, you had people with expertise in transportation and other areas. I think of all the people who spoke, though, there was a real estate agent with considerable experience.
Patty Cohen.
And she very nicely talked about the long view of real estate, the direction involved, in some cases affordability, et cetera. But more, I was very much impressed with her ability to say when someone is looking to have a home, to think about the whole time they might be there in that home, starting when they're young and maybe they need a little bigger place, and even then looking on as they become older, how that translates into being a livable area. I think what was inspiring was to see that people with these different aspects of community life be able to pick up on the strong message. And one of them was, you know, if you have a problem with crime, it doesn't mean you have to hire more police services. What you may want to do, as he suggested, and he pointed to examples, you may want to have places that are safer for people to be, and those can be structurally developed, whether it's a park.
Drive bad behavior out by driving good behavior in.
Yeah.
It's just kind of fundamental.
Yeah, impressive. We'll have to see what the follow-up is. You're right. It was an extraordinary gathering of people from all aspects.
Yeah.
We had a
couple other events in Anchorage prior to coming out here, and they were really well attended to. My telephone's been sort of blowing up with people saying thank you, and I'm so glad you brought him here. It's really kind of gotten us going, and I think that just the onus is now, that's what we wanted to do, is not drive the work but facilitate it and get that spark of energy that people say, you know, it's not so hopeless. We're not really pitted against each other. We have some common things we can work on. So
yeah. One last plug, the video of the event will be up on Radio Free Palmer's YouTube channel by probably the end of the weekend. Let's turn to something else that happened, though. Zaz, are you still with us?
I sure am.
Okay. Otto Feather, director, person in charge of many emergency services, has resigned. And as he resigned, in his letter, there was a certain bitter quality. Maybe you could summarize that.
I don't have the letter in front of me, but yes, I think bitter is a good way to describe. So this was Otto Feather, the he's been director of emergency services, which I believe is still the biggest department in the borough because of all of the paid on-call responder numbers. He'd been a director for about 2 years, just under 2 years. And came with a, you know, very distinguished military career. And so, you know, brought, I think, a military management perspective to the job. And, you know, it's still not officially clear to me what happened. But what Mr. Feather is citing is, you know, an atmosphere he describes as being sort of subversive from, it sounds like, some assembly members. Perhaps the borough mayor, and there is, you know, a certain amount of evidence. The borough mayor did publicly criticize the emergency services department's public information process during and in a few days after the earthquake, November 30th, when there was a kind of scarcity of information available about what was happening up here, and Otto Feather took the blame for that. But before that, Bernhalter, the borough mayor, was on Facebook saying, you know, we let the public down. Public affairs was cut out of the loop. We've talked about this program before, but the former public information officer, Patty Sullivan, was and is no longer serving in that capacity, although she remains the public affairs director for the borough, which is kind of confusing. Played a role in Otto Feather's resignation. At least that's what the borough manager told me. Otto Feather did not return my request for comment. And so there are a lot more questions and answers right now in terms of exactly what he was referencing and what this means for the future of this department that's mm-hmm. really facing challenges for years now with flat, I don't know if it's typically flat funding, but not a lot of additional resources while the population is growing mm-hmm. and the number of responders is crashing. Mm-hmm. So this is it's really kind of and has been for some time, a critical time for that department.
And I believe Ken Barkley has been put into an interim position.
Interim director. Moosey says he's going out for an external search. So
right.
That wasn't done. Bill Gamble was an internal pick after the former director did a project.
Was Feathers an external search too? Because he
no.
He had been hired as an assistant and then was elevated to the position of director. And also at the bottom line, I noticed there was some reference to the creation of a new PIO position, job description, et cetera. So,
The borough is working on some kind of a vague public information policy that was referenced during an assembly meeting. And it's also unclear where that policy is in terms of its.
So
what department is living in right now?
So I'm curious, Philip, from the standpoint of being up there in Talkeetna during the earthquake, had you found a dearth of information from the borough?
I think saying a dearth is putting it mildly. I was having a great deal of trouble finding any information until a few hours in, and I think I've covered this on the program before.
The first
piece of real information I ended up getting was from Terry Dolan,
and that's
because I was asking Talkeetna Sewer and Water System. And, of course, my go-to was, one of the first things I did was reach out to Patty Sullivan because that's who I've always talked to in situations like this. And, Zaz, in your article, you point out that, in past disasters, the Sockeye Fire and thing in previous years, she'd been the go-to and would, hold availabilities or at least, one-on-one be available to talk to journalists so we could get information out to the people. And as all this has happened, and I've been playing catch-up after coming back from San Diego, it's like, thinking back to November 30th and December 1st and December 2nd, and like, okay, what's going on, guys? Mm-hmm. Especially when you put that up next to the municipality of Anchorage,
yes.
And who I think did a great job getting information out. But as far as the resignation goes, there was some really pointed language, and one of the quotes here, institutional parochialism, selfishness, and duplicity, and unchecked sabotage.
Those are strong words.
Those are very strong words coming from, from a public safety official. And as Zaz pointed out, one with a very strong military record, at least a couple of hundred sorties, as I recall,
as a combat pilot. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Somebody with a lot of coming in with a lot of credibility to level that kind of criticism is pretty harsh. And again, in a department that has had no shortage of controversy and issues in the past few years.
Of course, the bottom line for me is he resigned, but how did he get to that point? Did he just throw up his hands and say, "I'm resigning"? Or was there some discussion, a conversation that involved the borough manager that said it might be in your best interest to resign?
Or is a defense just the best offense? I think there's so many layers there that goes back, and referring to what Zaz said earlier, the amount of responders that were on duty when Bill Gamble was there and then are now on duty under his auto Feathers' direction has changed significantly. I was surprised at those numbers in the article.
Yeah.
I'm not part of that conversation. I'm not really looked into it, but does it lend to management style? What are the reasonings behind that? I think it's pretty significant.
So, Philip, in Talkeetna, did you find that there's been a decline in people participating in EMS as well?
It's been a little while since my last check-in with EMS. I know that the fire department, at least as of last year, 2018, that they had some success in getting people in the door and trained. But staffing EMS has been an issue up here for a while now. So.
Well, we're almost at the end of another edition of Valley Edition, and I would like to check in with both Philip and Zaz to see if there's anything we have missed. Philip, I know you've just been back, but is there anything sitting on the front burner in Talkeetna that we should speak about?
Well, potentially a couple of effects of the government shutdown is as we get close to climbing season, or closer to climbing season, there's a 60 day, you have to apply for a permit to climb the mountain 60 days out. There's already been at least one case of someone who was supposed to make a winter attempt, came all the way from Europe to make a winter attempt, got here, the government shut down, and was not able to make that attempt. So, and I think he's in the range currently climbing something else that you don't need a specific permit for. But as we get closer to climbing season, there could be a significant economic impact here on Talkeetna.
Interesting point. Zaz, anything in your purview?
No, although I thought it was supposed to be warmer this week, and maybe it is down in the core area, but I think it's below zero up here in Willow. What's it doing in Talkeetna this morning, Philip?
It's hovering right around zero up here at the moment.
Yeah, it's cold. I thought it was going to be, like, you know, regular.
Banana belt here, 12 in Palmer.
Yeah, 12, 13 degrees. Okay, well, thank you all. I want to thank Philip Manning for calling in from KTNA. Thank you, Philip.
Always a pleasure, Mike.
And I want to thank you, Zaz, for staying warm in that cold temperature, calling in from, are you in Willow or elsewhere?
Yeah.
You're in Willow. Okay. And I want to thank Terry for coming on in here.
I encourage you all to come to Palmer, the Banana Belt.
And I want to thank Ellen for coming in and listening to this. We'll be back next week with another edition of Valley Edition.
You've been listening to Valley Edition, a weekly panel discussion on current issues in the Matsu Valley, moderated by Mike Malevsky. Valley Edition is a production of Radio Free Palmer, recorded at our studios in Palmer, Alaska. The views and opinions of hosts or guests do not necessarily represent those of Radio Free Palmer, this station, or its underwriters. If you have any comments or questions about this program, email manager@radiofreepalmer.org.